Earners, what's up? Y'all know I'm big on doing your research, sharing your research, and giving credit to where you found the research. But I always get asked the same question. Where do I start with the research? And the answer is easy. It's our sponsor, Yahoo Finance. Whether I'm tracking the daily movement of my favorite companies, doing technical analysis with their easy-to-use charting platform, or checking balance sheets, Yahoo Finance makes something very complex simplified. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. Whether you're a seasoned investor or you're looking for extra guidance, Yahoo Finance gives you all the tools and data you need in one place. They're the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. You could actually securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including your 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart great investors, and it's how Yahoo Finance ensures you have the insight to look at your wealth in its entirety. With a community of over 90 million users each month, the real strength is helping you on your way to financial success. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, that's yahoofinance.com. You heard me, yahoofinance.com. Don't wait, don't hesitate. I use it. You should go over there and start using it now. Earners, what's up? Look, I want to give y'all a little peek behind the curtain of producing Earn Your Leisure. It's a lot more than just sitting down and chatting. It involves meticulous planning, recording, editing, and then promoting each episode to ensure it reaches all of you. And if you picked up any of our merch, then you know there's a whole extra layer of logistics from inventory management to shipping. Running a podcast is like running a small business. And speaking of business, I know many of you entrepreneurs are involved in e-commerce. You understand how crucial it is to streamline operations and cut costs wherever possible. That's why I want to talk to you about ShipStation, the multi-carrier shipping solution that integrates seamlessly with all your online sales channels. It's all about optimizing your shipping, connecting with expert partners, and freeing up more of your time to focus on scaling your business. Now let's talk about our experience with ShipStation. This tool has been a game changer for us, especially with automating routine tasks. Being able to manage everything from one dashboard and print shipping labels with just a click, absolute lifesavers. Plus, the discounts we get on shipping costs are incredible. Honestly, it feels like we're saving thousands. And as our show and merch sales have grown, ShipStation's robust automation and reporting features have helped us keep up without missing a beat. For those of you who get overwhelmed by order volumes, ShipStation's easy-to-use dashboard is a dream come true. You can import orders from any sales channel, apply shipping preferences automatically, and handle customer service issues right there. Not to mention the savings with up to 89% off carrier rates like UPS, DHL Express, and USPS. It's no wonder over 130,000 companies stick with ShipStation long term. So, are you ready to turn your shipping challenges into growth opportunities? Head over to ShipStation.com and use promo code EARN for a free 60-day trial. Again, that's ShipStation.com, promo code EARN. Start streamlining your shipping and scaling your business today.
All right, guys. Welcome back, EYL. We got a very special episode today.
Bling, bling.
Bling, bling edition, for sure. We're going to jump right into this. So this is something that is extremely exciting episode for us.
Yeah.
Growing up. Hip hop.
No pun intended.
Yeah, you know, if you listen to the podcast, you know that music played a major part in our development growing up. It really shaped our lives. And if you listen to rap music specifically, you know that jewelry is a big part of rap music.
Bling bling.
Yes, bling bling. Bling bling in a dictionary.
Yeah.
That's a fact.
That's
a fact. So you know, a lot of times we aspire to buy gold and buy diamonds and to buy chains, and that's just part of the culture. There's no way around it. That's just, it is what it is.
Yeah.
But like all things in life, it's a business. The jewelry business is a billion, probably $1 trillion industry worldwide, global business.
Yeah, definitely.
Every continent.
Definitely.
It's crazy. So my man Deion Smith is a legend within his own right, because if you're from New York City, or if you ever been in New York City, you've heard of the Diamond District.
Can't miss it.
The Diamond District is crazy. It's like a 2-block radius in Midtown Manhattan, and everything on there is jewelry.
Yeah.
Like all of the big boys is there. That's where everybody gets their chains from. That's where Jacob the Jeweler shop. I don't know if it's still there, but that's where it was.
That's where he started.
He started there. Yeah. I mean, you can't miss it. The light post has two big diamonds. Yeah, right? Yeah. Just in case you forgot where you're at.
Yeah, and like Deion was telling me, like the Brinks trucks pull up like 3 times a day.
Oh yeah.
And it's crazy. But it's real nondiscreet though. Like if you don't really know, it's not as flashy as you would think it would be. It's very nondiscreet. I mean, you get robbed. So you got to kind of have it nondescript.
Welcome to New York City.
It's a culture. It's a culture within itself.
Yeah.
It's but one thing, if you go there, you know that the people that are in control of it don't look like the people that's buying it, right, for the most part. Not the hip-hop.
No.
Right. Nah, they don't look like us at all. But Deion is interesting because he has a jewelry manufacturing business. He's the only black jewelry manufacturing the Diamond District in New York, period.
That's correct.
So there's different levels of the jewelry game, right? Yeah. There's the retailers who's actually selling you jewelry.
That's who we buy from most of the time.
Right. But then there's the manufacturers who's actually making jewelry.
Mm-hmm.
So he has his own manufacturing company. He employs over 20 people. Gross revenue over $5 million last year. It's a thriving business. Like I said, the only black company in the Diamond District.
100% owned.
100% owned.
Right.
And his father is a part of it as well. Tell the backstory on that. So it's a good story. So first and foremost, thank you for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you for
welcome.
Having me.
Welcome,
thank
man.
You for having me.
Appreciate
it.
Welcome
to the green room.
Yes, sir.
So, and shout out to my man Fernando, who
the legend.
Thank you, Fern.
Who referred this. So,
client.
All right. So can we talk? Let's jump right into it. So you have a jewelry manufacturing company, right?
Correct.
But we got to tell a backstory before we even go into what jewelry manufacturing is.
My family is from Belize. So basically they migrated here probably late 70s.
So you're first generation?
Correct. First generation.
Know something about that.
So yeah, my dad actually, he looking for work. He just ended up, he took a job in the Diamond District, basically. And his boss became his friend, became his mentor. And for me, again, I would, after school, I mean, I technically grew up out there. So I grew up in a factory, but it wasn't glamorous, you know? It wasn't something you were proud of at that time, as from my perception as a child.
So what'd your dad do? Like, what was his?
He was cleaning jewelry. Like,
he cleaning, was cleaning
like,
jewelry.
Like bench polishing is what they call it. Mm-hmm. And, but growing up in the Bronx, it was such a contrast. I mean, this is the 80s now, right? And I don't have to tell you what the 80s were like. I don't have to tell you.
It's crazy.
But that train ride, and you couldn't pull out a phone and hashtag and see what was going on. I mean, I could tell you what's going on in Nova Scotia right now. But back then, I mean, your world consisted of, as far as your eyes can see.
Two train, five train, six train.
Correct. So I only knew that the radius of my neighborhood. But that train ride to the Diamond District was fascinating, because it's the first place I saw wealth. I saw at that time it was like limousines. I mean, I saw money being spent, and it intrigued me, and I saw diamonds. I mean, I'm a kid, but it was interesting. But when I would go upstairs, it was not glamorous at all. It was hard work. You're working with metals.
Yeah.
Working with metals. It was everything in there had the skeleton with the X on it. Every material we need said caused cancer. I mean, it wasn't glamorous.
How old were you when you do this?
I was about maybe 11 when I started.
So so how did that feel, where it's like you're seeing two sides of the coin, right? You're seeing your father who immigrated to this country.
Correct.
And he's working, and I'm assuming he's not making a lot of money.
No.
But you go downstairs and you're seeing some of the wealthiest people in America.
Yeah.
And like,
have to understand, and then now if we fast forward a little bit to like the 90s, and now I'm a teenager, so I'm there, you know, after school, summers. You know, I've literally, Jacob the Jeweler was, he was starting out right there. So I saw everyone, like from Destiny Child, when, you know, I've seen, I mean, there's nobody, Will Smith, there's nobody I have not seen on this little block. And as a teen, I mean, right now it's normal to me. I mean, it's not a big deal, but as a teenager, I was like, you know, it was fascinating.
Bragging to your friends about that.
Right, yeah. But again, it was, I was seeing the factory work part of it.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, did you ever think to yourself, like, this is crazy, like, there's such a great contrast of like the haves and have nots.
Correct.
Because you're seeing
Correct.
It.
Correct. I'm seeing it.
Because yeah. a lot of times, one of the good things I like about living in New York is that you can expose yourself to anything. Like the other day, I just randomly walked down Fifth Avenue, like the Upper West Side all the way down. And it was just amazing to me to see, like, there's so many wealthy people right. in New York City.
Across the street from poverty.
Exactly. Right. And it's yeah. like, it's when I say wealthy, I like say net worth of 50 million, yeah. 70,
and you're in the supermarket with
100
yeah.
million.
yeah.
But then it's like, you could take a train and people are in public housing.
Correct.
But a lot of times people never, you just stay in your element.
Yeah.
So you don't even realize that there's such a big difference.
You don't
when
realize
you're seeing
it.
That as a kid, did that make you want to say, I need to get on the other side of the table?
So what I learned was, again, growing up in the Bronx, your mind is, again, there's no way to see what's going on outside.
Right.
Yeah.
The nationalities were Black, Puerto Rican, Dominican. That's it. That's all I grew up around. But the train ride would expose me to different cultures, the Jewish culture, the Indian culture, the Russian culture. And I was comfortable. I mean, I admired these other cultures because at the time they were different. And, you know, you would that perception as a Black person in the jewelry industry, you know, you'll never survive. That's a false perception, because as long as you're honest in that business, I mean, you're going to thrive. They're going to help you. They're going to work with you.
It sounds like your train ride is what people go to college to get, right?
Correct.
That people leave that bubble of their community
to
go to their
to get out of your bubble.
Go to college and get this experience of interacting with other cultures. Like, you literally got that from riding the train.
I got that.
That's crazy.
I got that. You know, and being upstairs and again, you know, there's just this misconception that if the person doesn't look like you, you can't do business with them, or they don't want to do business with you. But it's false. And in that industry, I mean, I could speak for that industry. I was embraced by the other ethnicities that were there, that were in total contrast to what I was at, you know, my neighborhood where I was growing up. It was two different worlds. But yeah, I had the full support. I had the full support. You know, by the time I was in my 20s, I was trying to figure out, can I do this? But I had spent so much time there, I realized that if I needed funding, mm-hmm. I can get that with a handshake. And I knew everybody, because when I started out so young. So I started out from doing deliveries.
So you would, yeah, I was gonna ask you, what age would you start working?
About 11. I started going, again, with my dad, I was going to work eight years old.
Child labor law.
Correct, right.
He's a real island boy.
But by the time I was 11, I'm already making runs. So I'm going, like, again, I'm not seeing only the glamour that's downstairs on street level. I'm upstairs, I'm meeting people, you know, so the deliveries helped me. Then, of course, I did the actual labor. I had to learn that from—
Like how to make jewelry.
How to make it from
you
scratch.
You make it, polishing,
yeah,
setting.
I did every step of that. I learned that, but that could only get me so far. That could only get me a job with someone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I needed to think bigger. So I noticed we had a problem. The phones kept ringing, so I started getting on the phones. Once I got on the phones, I knew the customers.
Mm.
I started having a relationship with the customers. Once you have customers, now I'm in position to start a business, but you have things like rent, you have things like Con Ed, you have employees that need to be paid. That's a numbers game, and a lot of people do not know their numbers. You could have, it could look good, but you must know your number. Your numbers are changing hourly when you're running a business. So I realized that, okay, I have the customers. I know the vendors that I would need. The only thing was backing. I would need capital.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in my early 20s. I mean, you're not getting, again, to borrow for the jewelry business, that's all. I mean, anybody will tell you banks are not lending. The risk is just too high when you're dealing with precious metals and things like that.
What are some of the risks that the banks are looking at?
Well, I mean, it's money laundering. I mean,
number one.
I mean, that's number one.
That's what Jacob went to jail for.
Terrorism. I mean, it's just you're not getting. But if you are a trustworthy person and you build your reputation, that's not going to happen overnight.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm saying. If you could have all the money in the world, you're not going to get up tomorrow morning and open a jewelry manufacturing company. You're not, because there's too many ways to lose. I mean, the dirt on the floor is money. Okay, so it's gold that needs to be refined. You lose your shirt on the dust that's on the floor is gold. People don't know that. So you would need to build up your reputation before embarking on that. And again, once I realized that the peers in the industry would trust me with capital, at that point there was no stopping me. My decision was made at that point.
So, all right, so your early 23, something like that?
Well, you know what? I would say about like 25, I'm just like, what am I going to do?
So at 25, you've been working in the industry for 14 years.
Correct.
Pretty much learning every capacity.
So, like, I don't know. I heard someone say this before, but it's everyone's overnight success takes about 15, 20 years.
You go to college?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
I went to BMCC.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you, at 25, you decide, okay, I need to actually have my own business, right?
Correct.
So you you can't get a loan from a bank.
No.
That's not going to happen. No. So you have a mentor in the Diamond District that you said kind of was your father's boss?
Basically, my father's boss turned into his friend and mentor and turned into the same thing for me. So he along with my father taught me the craft of the business. So I knew how to produce. I knew how to produce. But it came to a point when he no longer wanted, you know, he retired and whatever the case may be. So I had to make a decision, is am I going to carry this on or I'm going to do something else?
His business?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Well, basically we branched out into two companies under the same umbrella, under the same roof. The way that works is there's a part of the jewelry industry that's called casting. That's the loss wax process. That's where you see the pouring metals and stuff like that. Then there's a part called finishing. So we opened up a finishing company, basically a room inside of his place, where we would just finish what he casted.
Mm.
Okay,
they're working hand in hand.
So working hand in hand.
Okay.
But by the time, you know, he came of age and says, you know, he was done. Now I had the company, but having the space, having the equipment, having the customers, you still need financing for a business, for a jewelry business. I mean, you it's high end products. You need funding. But once I was able to get, again, in that business, you're able to get loans on a handshake. They're very old fashioned, whereas they look you in your eye, they feel you. And once I was able to get funding, you know, I was probably like 25, and one of the wealthiest people out there was able, basically had my back. So that gave me the motivation. And at that point, there was no turning back.
So you were, originally you was under your mentor's umbrella.
Correct.
When did you break out of that?
90s, probably 90s. Actually, my father named the company AJC because at that time it was the phone book. So anything with an A, he wanted to be on the top or whatever this may be. So I'll always keep that name.
So that's not synonymous with anyone's name?
Right, no, it just stands for all jewelry contract.
Okay.
And I'll explain later why it's a contracting company.
Okay.
But yeah, so I took over maybe late 90s, 2000s, around that time. Very young, but again, at that point, I've already had so much experience, and I just knew everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I knew everybody at this point.
And at that time in the 90s, what ethnicity is in control of the Diamond District? Are we talking Russians, Jewish?
All three. The allies that I had were Jewish people, which they're awesome. And then again, those are the three nationalities that I dealt with. But they were a vast contrast for what I was going home to in the Bronx.
Okay.
You know, at that time, I'm not talking about the Bronx today. I'm talking about the Bronx 80s, 90s. You know, they weren't really role models out there. I mean, you know, but I was able to have role models. And I was seeing people that were successful. So I had things to aspire to.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I would go home and it was like the people to aspire to. I mean, we could go down that road.
Yeah.
But the people to aspire to, you know.
They're wearing the products that you make.
Correct. And I always say once I could see it, I knew I could achieve it. I mean, I knew I could do it.
So what were the steps? All right, so you got a loan. A loan or?
So what happens is, I had the customers at this point, okay? But, and I knew how to do the craft. but I'm still one person. So I knew I needed staff. And so now I had the customers, I knew the vendors to get material. And at that point I didn't have any real money, but what is money? I mean, once I had the allies, once I had the vendors and they would extend me credit, all I had to do was work at this point, you know, yeah. promote. Back then it was harder to promote, of course, mm-hmm. but it was word of mouth and things of that nature. But that's pretty much, that's yeah. what it was. That's why I made the decision to move forward. And again, I grew up in it. So I love it. Like I always say, manufacturing to me is the process of creating something from nothing.
So when did you open a spot that you're in now?
This spot, we moved to this location about 2 years ago, and then we were in another location. I had branched out and I opened on 30th Street. We were there for like 20 years. But I decided to move back to the Diamond District just for proximity purposes of, you know, getting my materials and just, there's just a flow. There's more workers out there. And so.
All right. So when you started out, what was the steps? What was the first step that you had to take? You got the backing financially.
Correct.
But outside of that, like, what did you do to actually get up and running with your own shop?
So basically, again, now it was customer pleasing. It's customer pleasing. It's being competitive with pricing, and basically letting, as of right now, is just letting people know that I'm there, because other, like factories, they don't really promote because they don't really have to. Like the jeweler or the designer, they promote themselves, and they, once they generate business, they generate business and send it back to the factories. So most of my competition, they were kind of like lazy. They just sat back and waited for it to come. But as time goes on, again, you'll never see most of these factories. They don't have a social media. They're not gonna, and for good reason, because I always make this analogy: like if you get your car washed and they do a good job, you scream at the top of your lungs, "Go over there! They do a great job." If I do a good job for you, I become your best kept secret. Because you don't want your, and say if you were a jewelry designer, you don't want your competitors to know where you manufacture, right? Because if you're a jewelry designer, your foundation is your manufacturer. So I'll do a good job for you, but you will never promote.
Because that keeps it custom.
Correct. And then, so how do you promote? This is a very hard business to promote, because how do you promote it? I make jewelry. Show me your jewelry. Show me your quality. I can't show it to you.
Yeah, so you can't,
because it's not my design.
Okay, right.
It's not my design.
You can't.
It's like intellectual property. It's that person's design.
Okay,
right. So I'll mass produce it, but yeah. So that's pretty much it. Now I can't come out with my own line because now I'm in direct competition with my customer.
Right.
So I can't have a jewelry line. Yeah. You know, it's a conflict of interest.
And you can't even tell people who your customers are.
I can't even tell you who my customers. So how do you promote? Right? I can't tell you who I work for. Most people, like the high end and the bigger brands that I do mass production for, yeah. I have to sign an NDA. You know, I have to sign because I'm their best kept secret, basically. Another analogy I like to make: if you go to a car dealership, the person that sold you the car did not make the car. You know, so factories are not really promoted. How do you promote it? So what I started doing, because I realized that we had to get visible in this new time. Every business, I believe, right now has to exist somewhere online. You have to. But everyone was like, what are you going to promote? You have to stay quiet. You can't, you know, any customer I mention their name, I lose them. So how do you promote it? So whatever, I got creative. I was like, look, I'm going to promote the service that I offer. It's a service.
Yeah, and
you know, it's a service. And I started promoting the process. And some of the stuff I would post on social media, they're like, what does that have to do with jewelry? But it was enlightening. People got interested in it, wanted to know, you know, who was making their stuff and things like that. And a lot of designers started saying, hey, you could go ahead and post my stuff. Some of them.
Yeah.
You know, so but without their permission, I would never.
What are some of the services? Are we talking like the molding? And
so basically, if you, my company is like B2B. So it's business to business. Basically, you had an idea.
Mm-hmm.
You would submit like a drawing to me. Say, listen, I'm going to go in the jewelry design space. I want to manufacture these pendants, these rings, these, you know, whatever, right? You would give me a drawing. We would do CAD design. I'd give you a wax model. That wax model is something in your hand. It's out of the paper now. You would now just decide, okay, wow, I'd like this in silver, brass, gold, anything you would want. So then I would cast it. Now, you need one right now. But let's say you promoted it and you needed 5,000. Then I would mass produce it for you. Now, let's say you did handmade jewelry and you made jewelry for yourself. So you made one piece. Now, people like it. You get an order for 5 pieces. So you sit here and you make 5 pieces. People really like it. They order 5,000 pieces. You're not going to sit here. So even if you can do it yourself, mm-hmm. you're not going to. So that's why it's a contracting company, because now you would contract the work out to me. So listen, this is my original piece. I need you to make me 5,000. Now I have the manpower, the equipment, the machinery, the resources to produce on a large scale like that. And that entail would grow your company. So my business also technically goes to entrepreneurs who have their own respective lines of their own. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, like that, they order from me daily as they get orders.
So the best way to really describe it is that you're the back end. You're correct. The actual manufacturer.
Actual manufacturer.
Where nobody sees that part of the process. Sees that part. Like you're actually making the hot dogs that Nathan is selling.
Correct. There so, it goes. Yeah.
All right. That's interesting.
I like that analogy.
Yeah, because everybody, like, a lot of time when you're talking about jewelry, you're just thinking about the storefront.
Yeah.
You're thinking about a jewelry store. The person that actually is selling jewelry.
Right. You got the perfect lighting. You got everything sparkling in front of you. It's not being made there. But if you saw that, it's not glamorous.
You're making the jewelry to sell to the jewelry store.
Correct. To sell to the designer that sells to the jewelry store.
Right.
And so, you know, so that's basically what that is. Now, another thing is, it's like, all right, so let me come and see. There's nothing to see there because, you know, it's just nothing to see there. There's no showcase. Every jewelry is custom. It could be mass produced, but every piece of jewelry is the intellectual property of the designer. So it's basically the factory. Mm. Very hard to promote. Very hard to promote that. You know, but I'm just shedding light to it. And a lot of people have been receptive. I mean, it's unbelievable.
So you had the business, right? You started it. You talked about equipment. What's the type of equipment that you need? Like, and what is the cost? Because this sounds like it's going to be really pricey.
So you need ovens to make jewelry. No. Now, unless you see someone with ovens from here to the ceiling, they're not making it there, right? So you need ovens to make jewelry. Just the Con Edison on having ovens burning all day could be $5,000 to $10,000 a month. That's your Con Ed bill.
That's right? An electric bill for anybody outside New York.
Yeah. It's an electric bill, right. Yeah.
10 G's a month.
Could be.
That's crazy. And how many would you need to run a type of...
One or two, but that's your first course.
That's crazy.
You can't do everything yourself because you can't. You have two hands. I get an order for 5,000 pieces. I can't do it myself. So you need employees. You need skilled craftsmen. A lot of people, that's a dying breed of skilled craft. A lot of people come from, you know, their countries with that skill. I try to find them, you know, and hire them because it's not everybody that has that skill, that craftsmanship to work on jewelry, you know.
All right. So in the next segment, we're gonna get into the jewelry industry as a whole and ask some questions that I'm curious about, and I'm sure that a lot of other people will be curious about as well.
For sure.
All right. So So jewelry business is interesting. So you actually make jewelry, but you was telling me off camera, it's a whole process to make jewelry, right? Like you have to go buy, like, let's say gold watch. You go buy gold, right?
Right.
Then you have to, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but you melt it down.
Correct.
And then you like sculpt it into whatever you want to make it into. Right.
So there's a process called the lost wax process, right? This is how this, and also it's also called casting. All right. So now with this, to create a piece, you would go, you'd buy raw gold, 24 karat gold. You would then alloy it down.
Where are you buying the gold?
So I source all my metals right on 47th Street.
Okay.
So you would buy the raw metal, you would alloy it down, then you would melt it. That's why you need a melter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You need a wax. You need a wax. If you see some of the videos, you'll see like wax trees. And then we put a plaster over it, right? This is like it's a 24-hour process. You put a plaster over it. That plaster hardens. The reason you need ovens is because now that wax holds the form that was inside those cylinders that you see that I post. The heat from the oven is about 1,200 degrees, right? That melts the wax and leaves the cavity. The wax leaves an empty cavity. So when you melt the metal, you go ahead and pour that into that cavity. Mm-hmm. So that gold is now in a liquid form. You pour it in there, it hardens. Once you break the cast off, whatever was in that wax form, whatever was in that tree is now in gold.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And at that point, then it's clipped off the tree, and then it goes on a bench and it's polished and things like that. So again, you need motors, you need equipment. I mean, you're not going to see this in a jewelry store because mm-hmm. they're not making jewelry there. They might have a little steamer or they might have a little polisher, but they're not casting jewelry there. You need equipment.
So after the polishing process, now it goes into the mold. Is there like
after the polishing process is pretty much done, unless there's stone setting and things like that.
Okay.
And yeah. So because when it comes out, it's a raw casting. It's raw metal. So you know it'll cut you. It's rough. It's so those wheels that you see the polishing, that's what gives it that refined finish, and then at that point it's packaged in my customer's packaging mm-hmm. and then sent out.
Okay.
So all right. So, and you were saying that like the difference between like 14 carat, 24 carat
is... So 24 carat is fine gold. That's 100% gold.
Pure gold.
That's pure gold. All right. Now, they're different. You have 22 carat, you have 18 carat, 14 carat, and 10 carat. You know, for example, 18 carat is only 75% gold. The rest is alloy. 14 carat is 58.3% gold. The rest is alloy. So if you're wearing 14 carat, you're wearing half gold, half alloy. Like Rolex doesn't even, there's no Rolex, no gold Rolex that's 14 carat. It's not considered. It's just not for their standard.
So does that make 14 carat a stronger gold?
Well, the more alloy, the alloy makes it stronger, right? Correct. Like if you wouldn't wear 24 carat, because it would be bendable, it wouldn't work. The highest carat you would wear is 22 carat, and that's about like 96% gold. So, but and then 10 carat is 41.7% gold. So, you have to, you know, it's not simply throwing your chain on a scale and saying and looking at the price of what gold is trading on and saying, oh, this is what my chain is worth. No, because it's not full gold. It's a percentage of gold.
So nobody has fully gold anything.
No, you wouldn't wear 24 carat. 22 carat is 90, I think it's like 96%. So that's fully gold. 18 carat is that's respectable. You know, it's 75%. It's 75%. But you know, when I was in the Bronx, everybody was like, it better be 14 and 14. But it, you know, 14 carat is half gold and half alloy.
So when and we've seen people wearing, you know, the big kilo rope chains, right? They put that on the scale.
Right. You don't
the
know.
Weight
you
is not
the
weight.
You
the
don't
price.
Know the percentage of the gold. So you cannot look at the market and say, okay, gold is 1,500 an ounce. And they put it on a scale and it's 10 ounces, whatever. No, it's not 1,500 times 10. It's the percentage of gold times 10.
How do you test gold? So if I'm buying gold, right, and somebody tells me this 20 carat, but it's really 20, it's really 14 carat. I can't tell by looking at it.
You look at it a lot. I mean, your eye gets kind of trained to the color if you see it all day. But the old fashioned way, you'll see them rub it on a piece of, you know, it's just primitive. But now there's computers that'll just print out the full element, every element
that comes. So
every
like,
element. So this day and age, I mean, no one is gonna.
You like scan it.
Yeah, they put it in a machine that scans it and gives a print out of all the elements. And then you'll know how much carats. Because there's a lot of time, you know, I would see people come to me and was like, you know, this is 10 carat, but no, it's not. It's 8 carat, you know? If the person that's mixing the alloy has the control, you know?
And they're doing that on purpose, right? So they can mark it
out. I don't want to say they're doing that on purpose.
Nah, I mean, back in...
But there's a human element, and he's talking about money.
Yeah. Back in high school, like, you know, a few of us used to go to Fordham Road. We won't say names.
Right.
Myself
right.
included. And we would get changed. And I'm like, yo, there's no difference between mine and yours. He looks a little more shiny.
Right.
But mine is 14 karat, man. Yours, what's yours? And right. It was like, we right. didn't know.
You didn't know.
We had no idea.
And then here's the other thing. Gold is it's like synonymous with time, right? It's the time you bought it. Okay. We could have the same chain, same weight, but if you bought it in 2010 as opposed to 2020, it's the same chain, same weight, totally different price.
Why is that?
Because the price of gold fluctuates.
Okay.
By the day.
Yeah.
Well, by the day. So if you had, again, if you had a shoebox of cash, well, you know that that's spending, even if you don't touch it. Mm-hmm. It's spending with time.
Right.
At least gold now, if it's charted, it usually goes up. Mm-hmm. So the chain you bought for, let's just throw a number, $5,000 10 years ago, now that chain could be double.
Inflation, really.
Correct. The chain could be double. So now you could sell it for $10,000. Mm-hmm. Now, if you had $5,000 in a shoebox 10 years ago, it's still $5,000, but you can do less with $5,000 back then as opposed to today.
Gotcha.
Right. So that's why gold is an investment. It is an investment. I mean, not diamonds per se. I mean, diamonds, you need to find a customer for it, but gold... The government buys gold, it is an investment. I mean, a lot of people look at it, if you're not educated, you say, wow, what a waste. I mean, it's, in theory, it's not a waste of money, in theory.
It's a commodity. And yeah, like you said, I mean, it does rise. Like you can buy gold
as an investment. Like, yeah.
So it's interesting because it's jewelry, but you can also use it as an investment as well. Like the price of gold, we were saying 10 years ago was $1,100. It peaked in like 2011 at 1900, and now it's 1400, a little more than
1470
per ounce.
I remember when it was 200 an ounce. I remember when it went to 350, we were like, forget it. This is outrageous. Yeah. We're gonna wait for it to drop. Then when it was 1900, we were like, wow. We would every $350 we spent was now gonna be $1,900.
Yeah,
you know, so. So again, when you buy a chain or you buy a ring, there's labor in that. You'll never get your labor back, but the gold stands. Now, if that gold appreciates past the labor that you paid or the premium you paid on it, you've made. And now your option was to put that money in the bank. The best bet was to buy gold.
But you said also with like jewelry stores or. I think it was jewelry stores. You said they have 3x markup, right?
Well, now I don't. It depends on whoever. Like some of my customers, right, which will remain nameless, they mark up about 3x.
But what I sell to them. That's kind of standard.
That's kind of standard because you have to understand they have their own respective brands. They have their own rents to pay. They have their own marketing that they have to do. I mean, they would not do it if there's no profit margin.
Right.
So they get it from me. Then they package it. I mean, again, they spend the money on building their brand. Mm-hmm. And brands are powerful. They have a following. It could be the exact same material, but people are loyal to a brand. So they're able to set their price and get it.
So gold is $1,400 an ounce.
I think it's about $1,488 an ounce for 24K.
For 24K, I think it's like $1,461 to be exact, but whatever. 1460.
By the time this airs, it'll be a different.
Who knows? It might be 1500.
So 1461 an ounce, right?
Right.
But let's say by the time you buy it, what do you buy? Like 1500?
So what it's trading for, no one will get it for that exact price.
Right, because they have to make a markup.
There's a premium. Now, again, possession. Gold could be that price, and this guy over here could have it. He could say, listen, it's cheaper than what I'm charging, but he doesn't have the amount. So who has it at the time of need can set the price. It's usually $25 above, 25 bucks.
20, all right,
above spot, they call it. Spot is what it's trading at.
Okay.
I think it's in the London fix closes about, I don't know, 11, 12 o'clock. Mm-hmm. So at 12 o'clock, the price is set. Doesn't matter what you bought it for yesterday. It doesn't, yesterday is gone. So now today, that's what your gold costs.
And that's per ounce, or is that?
Per ounce.
Per ounce, yeah. Right. So okay. $50 per ounce.
I mean, it's like there's 20 penny weight in an ounce. So you'll take whatever the price is divided by 20. So you can buy it by penny weight.
Okay. So, all right. So then they mark it up. So then you buy it. But then people buy it from you. And then obviously you have to make a profit off of it. Then what I'm getting at is that it is an investment, but for the average retailing person buying a gold watch, they're buying it at a tremendously higher price.
Correct.
Then, so it'll take time before, even if gold goes up.
So what I do, I would buy the materials. I would lay out, buy them. This is why you need funding, because you're buying gold. So you get a big order, you need more money, you know, you need. Mm-hmm. So I would buy, and I'm also, what I'm selling is the labor and the craftsmanship of what we've done to it, to produce your vision or, you know, your jewelry, your art, whatever it is. So, you know, so it's the labor that I'm billing for at that point.
So what's the amount of funding that somebody starting with typically need?
So again, you're gonna operate, I can speak only for New York. I mean, you're gonna operate in Manhattan. Right. Especially if you're jewelry, you don't wanna be in a corner somewhere. You know, you wanna be in the epicenter, right? Mm-hmm. So you're gonna need space to operate. You're gonna need brick and mortar. You're gonna need a place. You could sell online, but you have to exist somewhere, you know? Some landlords would want, you know, 6 months, you know, 6 months deposit. It's a business, right? It's not mm-hmm. it's not like an apartment. 6 months, then you're gonna have to sign a 5-10 year lease. So you're gonna commit. You have to be committed to that.
We're talking millions.
In the jewelry business, yes. $1 million really doesn't get you too far. It'll get you started, but again, you're gonna constantly need allies in that business. You're gonna constantly need vendors. You know, you need to keep your rent. I just explained what Con Ed could be, you know, so it's serious. I mean, it's not like you're not selling socks. Yeah. I mean, you know,
this ain't socks,
you know. Yeah. So it's easy to lose your shirt. Yeah. So you got to be focused. You got to watch your numbers. You got to have great relationships with your customers. And it's a small business. It's a very small community. So everyone knows everyone. So you make money on your reputation, but you can also borrow with a handshake. You know, there'll be no forms. There'll be no once you're trusted, and people believe in you. They don't really lend to the business. They look at you, or you know,
they're investing in you.
They're investing in you.
Yeah.
So yeah. But with a handshake, you can get the funding you need, and you should be fine.
How is jewelry devalued? Because you said like once you start to like put diamonds in it, it kind of like devalues it, right?
So every time you clean a piece of jewelry, it loses value.
Clean it.
Any piece.
Why?
Anytime
why
that? Because
you take polish off of it.
You're removing gold. You're removing a layer of gold. Every time you clean, every time you see it get shiny, that's a layer of gold gone, and that's dust on the floor.
You know, that's what you were saying before. The dust on the floor is actually gold.
In factories, there's refiners. You don't throw your garbage out regularly.
We're gonna use that.
Refiners come and yeah. So the dust on the floor is money. You know.
So how much does it go down like per? But like a couple percentage points?
It just depends on how many times it's cleaned. I mean, if you keep cleaning it over time, you're going to lose. Again, what you're losing is fluctuating by the day as well. There's different values.
So how are you supposed to clean it? Are you not supposed to clean jewelry?
Not too much. No, you're not. Actually, on 47th Street, you can clean a Rolex every day if you want. Rolex, they only will clean your watch 3 times in its lifespan. So you can't go to them. They document how much times they, because the value is weight as well. So yeah, no. You every time you clean your jewelry, you lose value.
So when we see, you know, these watch companies, Philippe Patek and Richard Mille, and we see people putting diamonds in them, they're actually losing value from the watch?
The watch is losing value.
Okay. Because
Patek will not buy, it's done. You've drilled holes in it. You've put aftermarket diamonds in it. That's it, it's done. But they do have, should I say street value? They have a street value. The consumers want it. There's people that say, no, I want that. And I'm willing to pay for the labor. That you'll never get back that labor. So someone sat there and drilled holes and did it. You're not getting that labor back. The diamonds, you're not really. I mean, the bank doesn't buy your diamonds. So, but it's a preference. And if you have a customer for it, then it's worth doing.
Okay. So and the diamonds once they're cut, are they losing value? Because I heard that when they're in the rarest form, that's when they're the most valuable.
Well, I'm not a diamond dealer. I work closely with diamond dealers.
Yeah.
But the diamonds will get damaged in trying to take them out. I mean, you're not going to really, they're going to break when you try to take them out. So it's a custom piece. Mm-hmm. It's the consumer that says, I want that. Mm-hmm. So it's yours. I mean, it has a value, but it's an aftermarket. You know, everything is aftermarket, you know?
So if somebody...
A plain Jane, they call it. A plain Jane is the best investment.
Shout out to Ferg.
Plain Jane Rolex.
That's it. That's the best investment. Plain Jane Rolex. If you plan on investing, I mean, you know, no, no place to park your money.
All right. So all you rappers out there.
Get your plain Jane.
Plain Jane.
Yeah. real quick, the difference between white gold, rose gold, and yellow gold.
No difference in price. That's just an alloy that's creating the color. Gold is yellow.
Okay. I've been gone.
So if somebody's just buying jewelry off the street, right? Because there's really no like rule book to say like, it's all kind of whatever somebody wants to kind of value it at. It's subjective. It's kind of subjective.
Subjective.
How does somebody know this is a good price to pay for this?
Well, again, this person, he's selling you a product that you don't know when he got it. So you can never know his profit, right? If, mm-hmm. like we just said, mm-hmm. if he bought this chain could be worth $10,000 right now. You can Google it, you can weigh it, it's worth $10,000 right now, today. But if it's something he had for the past 2-3 years and he paid $6,000 for it, well, he makes $4,000 on it. And he could, he held it for that amount of time. So, you know, but you'll never know. You don't know if he got it yesterday and he's making $200 on you. You won't know. You just won't know. It's a time thing. You have to know, like, look, the person that's in possession of it, that's giving me this product, is making on me. You just have to be comfortable with the price that you're paying in relation to what gold is going for and what, you know, labor is going for at the time of purchase, and be comfortable with that. And again, gold usually charts up inflation. Things don't mm-hmm. get cheaper. They usually go up. So whatever you buy now and whatever you spend in a premium or someone's labor 10 years from now, 5 years from, I mean, in a year from now, it could be paid for.
Yeah.
Recovered, you know?
Does the retailer actually know when the gold was made? Because, I mean, is there like some type of certification that they get when it comes to their store?
I can't speak for other manufacturers, mm-hmm. But with me, no, they won't know. I mean, gold is timeless, right? It's here before us. It'll probably be here after us. It's a, you know, mm-hmm. but when it's made, I believe some people would give some sort of paperwork as to when it was made, but who can really prove that? I don't know if that can be proven as to when something mm-hmm. is actually manufactured.
No. So what about platinum?
Platinum, I mean, there was, again, now when gold was like $200,
precious
platinum,
metal.
Precious metals. Yeah. Platinum was like over $1,000. I mean, it was ridiculous. That's why everyone started wearing white gold, so it could look like platinum, you know?
We can't tell the difference.
But now platinum is cheaper than gold, so.
Is it?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't check the numbers as of today, but platinum is cheaper than gold.
So nobody's really wearing platinum anymore?
No.
So your advice long term is just gold.
Gold.
Gold's better than
gold.
Anything.
Gold. Gold is better than cash.
Gold all in my chain.
In the shoebox. But only, you know, it's gold is like frozen money. You know, can it drop? Of course, it can drop. But
so
I mean,
what really made platinum spike up? Because I remember everybody was wearing platinum. That was like the thing in like the 2000s.
I'm not sure.
The music.
I don't know what was, you know, music.
Got to be the music.
I don't know what's going on in the world at the time. Sometimes, you know, they use platinum for whatever other types of manufacturing. You know, piping, whatever. I don't know what was going on at the time.
You said the reason, pretty much. Right. It was more expensive than gold, and people were trying to show that I can buy something that's more expensive.
Correct. Well, I think it's less of it. It's a scarcity. I think.
It's world factors when you're talking about precious metals.
Yeah.
It's world factors.
I did this.
And then the music, then it comes into demand. Once the demand is there, the value is going to go up.
Right.
You know, simply not buying platinum can make not buying anything. Make the value drop.
Right.
We're not wearing it right now. You know, so it could be that.
In other parts of the world, gold is still like very sought after as far as like just to hold. And like
gold has always been the currency of kings.
Mm.
That's the bottom line.
That's a fact.
That's the bottom line.
Like even in India, like when you get married, like they give tons of gold. The family gives tons of gold and they hold it. Yeah. It's like treasure.
Yeah, like almost. Ritualizing.
And it's a store value of, you know, wealth that grows over the course of time. Like you said, I mean, going back to forever.
Yeah.
Gold has always been.
I don't know if it was JP Morgan Chase, I think he said. He says, the only real money is gold. Everything else is credit. We could look that up. I'm sure. Yeah.
And money used to be.
Not my quote.
American dollar used to be backed by gold.
Right. But they took it off the gold standard.
Yeah.
You know,
Richard Nixon.
They took it off the gold standard. But I mean, to me, that just means that we literally create money now. I mean, we, you know, it's not like, well, I can't service your heater anymore because we don't have gold. You know, we create money. We print it.
Every day.
So that just means that it's not going to run out. Yeah. We just have to.
But that means the value of it.
Keep providing value.
Right.
And the money will be there for you.
I wanted to ask you.
Money is a side effect of service and product, basically.
If somebody, like, you have to be licensed, obviously, probably.
No. Not in New York. Not in New York. Not in New York.
Bonded?
No. Not in New York. No.
No?
No. No.
Insurance?
You need insurance. You need insurance. There is licensing for, not to hold the company, but there's certain manufacturing, like certain, when you're working with certain toxins, you need certain certificates. Not it's like a certificate, basically.
Okay.
But yeah, so yeah.
What about like a retail, somebody buys jewelry, they can get insurance on that jewelry, right?
Correct.
What's the best route for them to go to do that?
Well, I mean, I don't promote any insurance company,
yeah, but just
you know,
like,
because I don't have the experience that I haven't heard any horror stories, yeah. but it's just like a car insurance. You're going to pay monthly. If nothing happens, well, your money is gone.
You recommend people do that?
It depends on the type. Yeah, if you have $100,000 to $500,000 worth of jewelry,
get
insurance.
Yeah, we've seen people, you know, lose
get
their jewelry
insurance.
On get insurance. Yachts and on yeah, jet skis, yeah. And it's yeah, like, oh,
get insurance.
What do I do now?
Get
so,
insurance.
Yeah.
But
we've heard rumors of rappers that
getting robbed.
Set their robbery up.
Yeah.
To get insurance money.
Right. It could always get sticky. You're dealing with insurance, a police, and then it's
we don't
not
encourage
like,
that.
You know, and then it's just like, how do I know it's missing and it's not in your closet? You know, I don't know.
All right. So in the last segment, we're gonna talk about scaling model, your business, and a few other different things.
Cool.
All right. So as far as the jewelry business, it's interesting, especially in New York City with the diamond industry. Everybody is so close together. But you said it's kind of a community because everybody knows each other.
Correct.
So how does that work as far as competition? Because you're saying that like these guys help fund you, but you're also kind of their competition
so
as well.
Interesting. You know, we had moved the company about 16 blocks off the Diamond District. And the numbers at one point plummeted. And I couldn't understand why because I was saying, again, now I'm looking at it from a business standpoint. I love what I do, but now it was about business and keeping my employees fed, keeping their families, keeping their checks coming home, and I have to figure that out. So I'm trying to figure out why. We moved because of it was like a lot of competition. But what I realized where I was, I had moved to Chelsea area. Hmm. So when you think jewelry, you don't think Chelsea.
Mm-mm.
So I moved myself out of the consumer traffic pattern, you know? And not only that, all the materials I needed to operate on a day-to-day basis came from this. So now I'm paying someone to travel up there, get material. So I'm losing time, you know? And that's the commodity.
Most valuable asset.
Like, and in business, they say we broke even. I don't believe in breaking even because you lost time and you'll never get time back, right? So I started realizing that. And then when I moved back there, it was almost immediate, like within the same week. What happens is you get a overflow of work. You know, before I could say, all right, screen someone, hire someone, I could send the work upstairs. I could send the work around the corner to help me facilitate. So now I had like working hands.
Mm-hmm.
All the materials I need are right there. The skilled workers are like walking up and had a problem finding workers because they wouldn't venture off into you know, say Chelsea where yeah. the place was located.
Where are you finding these skilled workers? Are they coming out of a specific school or is there some type of technician?
It's something they come
school?
With from their countries. They were a lot of people that do craftsmanship and stuff.
Uh-huh.
They started young, most people, and it's like their families and you know taught them and things like that. But being in this hub.
Mm-hmm.
Actually made my numbers spike because everything I needed was right there. So what happens is instead of competing, it might look, if you walk the street, you'll see guerrilla marketing. Hey, come in here, come in here. You know, you feel uncomfortable. But when you go upstairs on a manufacturing standpoint, we're working together. So I'm able to produce faster, faster, cheaper. And again, all my materials, everything I need is right there. You know, and I can only speak for the manufacturing sector. Now, I don't know what it'd be like to have a, I always said that this guy has a booth, this guy has a booth, and they're all selling the same thing. I don't know about that. But from a manufacturing standpoint, having other manufacturers around me, it makes me stronger. It makes me stronger.
You said one of the biggest pieces to your success is having the mentorship. Obviously, your dad had, you know, the man that you guys, he was working for. Correct. He mentored you. Are you at the stage where you are mentoring someone, or is there like a mentoring like program within your business?
Well, no, not at the, and again, I've been, a lot of people have emailed wanting to intern, wanting to just see what a day, actually they did a report on me, like a day in the life of what I do, mm-hmm. which is flattering, but I still consider myself still growing, mm-hmm. you know, still learning, still adapting. You know, to a that industry is old fashioned, but it's changing. So mm-hmm. I'm still adapting, and again, not my quote, but overnight success is like 15, 20 years. Mm-hmm. You have to know your business inside out, and that's definitely the next step as I continue. Again, I'm going to branch out into more like investing and things like that. So it'd be awesome to show what I've learned, you know, to someone else. Absolutely. Yeah. Because again, that was the key. It was mentorship. Looking at someone do something day in and day out, you know, watch the routines that they do. And routine builds character. Mm-hmm. You know, you stick with something. And basically mirroring them, mimicking them. You find someone successful and copy them. That's what I did. And that's the fastest way to climb a ladder.
Shadi said that was one of like his great analogies. It was like when we were in school, we're taught not to copy. Business, you actually should.
You should. Right? You should. I mean, be works. Careful who you copy.
Yeah.
Be careful who you copy. You know, whatever you're around, that's going to rub off on you. Mm-hmm. You know, you could learn to be the best crook. I mean, whatever. but you force yourself around people, you know, that inspire you. You know, and you need to be inspired. I mean, you're not going to run an operation, to control a business, means you're dealing with a lot of people. You're dealing, again, being a boss, being a leader of a company. I mean, you're wearing a lot of hats. Yes, it's all about the numbers, but those numbers are not going to come if the employees are not happy. You need to sometimes be a therapist to an employee. You got to be a referee. You got to be, you know, a mediator.
Yeah.
You know, you have 20, 30 people working under one roof, you know, and you're the leader. You have to be sympathetic. You know, sometimes you have to deem someone not good for the team. You have to let them go. I mean, it's a lot of uncomfortable conversations as you rise in business.
That's a fact. Uncomfortable conversations.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot.
Definitely. That's a fact. So, all right. So, if somebody is, they have an idea to make a jewelry line, like EYL jewelry line, right?
Okay.
You're gonna you can supply us, right?
Absolutely.
But first, we have to actually draw up the mock of like what we want. Like
you would have to create the logo. You would have to find. I mean, I don't know if it'd be you yourself,
but get somebody.
Find an artist to create the logo.
Trademark it.
Correct.
Next step.
Correct. And then once you even before that, I mean, we can play with different things. Can change. Mm-hmm. You know, trademark something, and then you're like, you know, I don't even like this anymore. So once you agree on the design, which you'll be holding them in your hand at different, you know, before you get to the point of trademarking it. And so you would give me the drawing,
mm-hmm.
I would give you the piece back.
Okay. And all right. So, and you said like on average, if it's 3x markup, so I buy it for you from 30, I sell it for 90.
Correct. Correct. I mean, that's not a written rule.
No, I'm just saying.
Right. Yeah.
Industry.
But that's exactly. That's reasonable.
That's reasonable. Yeah.
Why is that reasonable though? That seems like a pretty high markup.
Well, because they have their overhead. They have to spend money to build the brand. The brand needs promotion. They're gonna have, again, it's B2B, right? So I'm, in theory, you guys would be a business. I'm selling to a business. You guys have operating costs. You don't have employees. You need websites. So they have to. And if they don't have capital, they can't promote the business. You know, you need capital to operate. Even if you could promote online for free, you to operate.
So if I wanted a custom piece of jewelry, it's cheaper to go to you directly.
Correct.
Much cheaper. How does somebody do that?
So, well, again, you'd have to know. I
would have to give it drawn up first. Correct. I can't go to you and say, can you make me a gold chain?
Now, I do have someone there that can do drawings. Okay. But it's better if you would just bring the idea, even if it's a rough sketch. Mm-hmm. And then at that point, then we go into 3D modeling, CAD design. You'll see it on a computer. You approve it from a computer. Then you'll approve it in your hand with a wax. We can control the price point because the price will come from its weight. So in the CAD design, the computer will tell you what it's going to weigh. And we can make it lighter. We could control the price before we even put anything on the table. Mm. The only upfront cost would be the CAD designing and the printing of waxes.
How much does that cost?
You want $500 to $1,000 and you have a piece in your hand. You have a prototype. And we can start off with cheaper metals like brass. You know, you wouldn't play with gold until you were positive and things like that.
So you make the first one. Let's just say it's the EYL pendant, and it's like Shotty gets one, I get one, and then if we put it out, then you mass produce
then
it.
Then we mass produce it. So you'll get an order, and now again, you'd have to hire. I mean, people to you could do it yourselves to a certain extent, but then let's say someone says, "Listen, we want to gift this at an event." I mean, again, it would be brass. It's not going to be gold. Mm-hmm. You know, it'd be a low ticket item, but still, you just want your logo out there. You know, in metal form, right? So at that point, yeah, we would mass produce it at that point.
What can you make? Watch, you can make a watch?
Watches, no. We don't make watches. Watches are made by those brands. Okay. We don't know who makes it, you know. Yeah. But I guess, you know, Rolex, Patek, those are their own brands.
You make like rings and
rings, pendants, bracelets, charms, earrings,
So there's a lot of talk about a pending recession, and I assume that would have a drastic impact on the jewelry business because that's expendable. You don't need a jewelry, right?
Right.
So, but you were around through the last recession, right?
2008. Yes.
How does economic downturn affect you?
So that's what happened. It made me change. First, we would only do silver and gold, but in a recession, it was like no one's buying. You're not buying precious metals. So that's when what we did was we got very creative. A lot of people got creative and we started manufacturing brass. Mm. So brass gives the look of gold. It's yellow. But you could do big pieces. Like a lot of ladies wear like big cuffs and stuff like that. So we started manufacturing brass. So now let's say you would make a $30 cuff, a $30 earring. But you do 10,000 of that. That's how you survive. And people can, in a recession, they can afford a $30 earring.
Yeah.
You know, whereas opposed, there was a $50,000 chain and you have enormous markups and things like that. So that's how we were, but you have to be creative. You have to be creative.
That costume jewelry actually.
That costume jewelry is also saved.
Saved you.
Saved me.
Costume jewelry is a huge market.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And it's expensive now. I mean, yeah. I'm saying these numbers for back then and things like that, but you go in the store and buy an $800, you know, brass pair of earrings, depending on whatever brand it is, and they demand that amount for it, and they get it. So it's not
even
cheap,
silver.
Per se. Silver. So that's how we started selling lower ticket items by volume, and that's how I got through that.
Dope.
Good plan.
Dope.
Yeah, you gotta get creative, man. You gotta stay above the water.
That's dope. So, all right. So, what's your, as far as like if somebody wants to reach out to you, how can they find, like, because you're in an industry that's not really marketable for the most part.
Right.
You're breaking the mold because, you know, obviously you're younger and probably, you have a different whole vibe. Right. So, how can somebody like find you, like, as far as,
If this day and age is social media.
Social media
is
the best.
But it's always been word of mouth. It's always been word of mouth. Right, again, because even a, say a jeweler or a designer, they're gonna hide me. They're not gonna.
Right.
They're gonna. They'll give me the business.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. But they won't say, you know, who did the work. So if someone, let's say you were an entrepreneur, or you wanted to create your online, or you just wanted to get a good price on something and skip the middleman, then you do a little bit of homework. You know, now you can hashtag jewelry making, jewelry manufacturing, and then, you know, I would definitely pop up at that point. And again, you can email me info@ajcjewelry.com, and we take it from there. And again, I don't have much competition in this industry where it comes to like social media and stuff like that, because most of these companies, they're not gonna promote. So
because they don't need to, or.
Well, because of all the what I just explained, promote what?
Right. I'm just saying, I'm thinking in terms of like, they probably have been their established
customers,
with clients.
They have more established clients too, and their customers will continue to promote themselves.
Exactly.
And then the kickback is the work, you know. But again, for me, again, those companies have been around for the grandfather's grandfather's grandfather, you know, they're 100-year-old. Most of those businesses, 100-year-old businesses. You know, for me saying I've been doing this for 20, 25 years, I mean, that pales in comparison. I'm like first generation.
You're the young boy in the game.
What's the clientele breakdown percentage-wise? Is it like 80% designers, 20% regular people that just want
customers? 90% designers.
Designers.
So 90%
designers. That's your client base.
Correct. That's my designers, entrepreneurs, and even startups, like a lot of startup companies. And, you know, but... Now, you know, I'm starting to get calls from people that are just trying to skip the middleman. Yeah.
How many brands in the portfolio?
It's a lot. It's like 20 years of brands. Hmm. So I don't have a number on that, but so over maybe they're not ordering on an everyday basis, like over 50 brands.
Okay.
And but yeah, now you have to understand there are some people that don't want to skip the middleman because the jeweler that they trust and they've been going to for years, actually, the jeweler will do that back work, get the CAD design, get it, draw it, design it. Some people don't have time for that. They just want to see it, a finished product, you know. But if you have a little bit more foresight and you want to do the designing because it is work, then you'd come to somebody like me and you'll save.
So you can potentially save 60% by going to somebody like you.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Good to know.
Absolutely, and depending on how aggressive your the person you're buying from is, maybe even more. I mean, like I said, these markups could be three times or more. You know, so you're coming to a manufacturer. You know, so if you go to, you know, Raymour and Flanagan, they have a factory where that's made. It's like you skip them. You know, you skip the brand. So,
all right. So, it was powerful, man. I appreciate you coming in. So, contact information, social media handles, all that information for
okay. So, people. Yeah. So, basically, if you want to contact me, it's info@ajcjewelry.com. The Instagram handle is ajcjewelry. That's pretty much it. That's how you would contact me on my business.
It's wedding season, y'all. So, if y'all need the ring, hit them up.
And also, but more importantly, aspiring entrepreneurs that want to become jewelry designers.
Correct.
You know, you gotta reach out to the source. You gotta get it from somebody. So,
correct.
Why not?
Don't say we didn't tell you who.
Exactly. Troy, some housekeeping items?
Yeah. Shout out to everybody on Patreon.com. That's our Proud to Pay program. It is grown. We got a community on there, y'all. So I just want to give a shout out, huge shout out to some of our Tier 5 members, Joseph and Markel. They have joined at Tier 5. So you know that now at Tier 5, you have access to EYL University, our online website, where we have courses, live webinars, and you'll be able to live stream our workshop. So shout out to y'all and Christian, who was a Tier 4 member, and Janice, who was actually on EYL University when we did our webinar about getting in the podcasting game. She said, you know, she gave up her membership at the gym to come to EYL. So thank you for joining and keep supporting that. And earnyourleisure.com, our merch is up there. We are wearing our winter season merch. It is cold in New York, so we have on our sweatshirts. Shadi has the hoodie on. I have the crew neck. And we added some more things on there. Our earners shirt is coming. So shout out to everybody that's supporting. You know, the earners are our community of supporters. They find our guests, our alumni, and they support, man. So be ready.
And also EYL University is something that we're extremely excited about. That's really, really dope. Interactive platform where, you know, we have three classes a week right now. Mm-hmm. Matt teaches a class every Monday on real estate investing. And then Wednesday is a floating class depending on different topic from a different instructor every single week. We have everything from life insurance to mobile home, to notaries. Mm-hmm. Probably won't have mobile homes too. and law, wills,
yeah, trust, credit,
everything.
Car leasing. We got it all.
No, we got awesome. It all. Then me and Troy teach a class every Friday. May move that to Thursday.
Yeah, we're going to push it up. Maybe.
But and that's also on a variety of different topics. So the good thing about the EYU University is that's interactive. So it's on Zoom, so you can actually ask questions and get them answered.
It's dope.
It's a whole interactive vibe. So yes, that is that. And thank you guys for rocking with us. We'll see you next week. Peace.
Peace. Awesome.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.